For over a century, the League of Women Voters has been a political, nonpartisan organization of men and women who are working hard to encourage informed and active participation in our democracy. We work to increase our understanding of major policy issues and to influence public policy through education and advocacy. Our mission is to empower voters and defend democracy. Although the League does advocate for issues after extensive study, we do not oppose, nor support or endorse any political candidate or political party. The purpose of tonight's forum is to inform voters. Neither candidate that's here this evening received the questions ahead of time. We did this on purpose so that you, the viewers, have a chance to evaluate the candidate's grasp of any of the important issues that face HD 62 constituents. So I encourage you to listen carefully to their responses. Ask yourself, did they answer the question? Does the response indicate they have a good understanding of the issue at hand? Do they have ideas on how to work with others to address the issues that we are all facing? We hope that your time with us this evening is well spent and will help you to make an informed decision when you go to the polls on Election Day, November 8th, Tuesday. Mark it on your calendars now. Our moderator for this evening is Ms. Courtney Hawking. She graduated from Adams State University with a degree in political science, and she currently is working with the university as an academic advisor in the counselor education program. She's also studying for her the LSAT and plans to attend law school in the fall. She comes to us highly recommended as an experienced guide and moderator for discussions. She is an award-winning delegate to the Model United Nations program, and she was the vice president and president of the student body prior to receiving her degree. Our timekeepers this evening are Kevin Durbin and Jan Owen. I'm sorry, Mitch Durbin and Kevin and Jan Owen. Our technical support is provided by the Monta Vista Chamber of Commerce, to whom we are grateful, and the League of Women Voters of Colorado. This forum is being recorded. The League of Women Voters and each candidate agreed prior to coming tonight that no excerpts would be allowed in any medium. This recording, this forum can be shown only in its entirety. I shall now turn the microphone over to Ms. Hawking.
Thanks, Wanda, and welcome. I am pleased to moderate our forum this evening. Before we begin, I will go over the rules the League has in place for candidate forums. The first, this forum is not a debate. There will be no rebuttals from the candidates, and the purpose of this forum is to inform voters through respectful questions. The candidates for each position will speak first in alphabetical order by their last names. We will alternate opportunities for each candidate to speak first or last during the forum. Both candidates will be asked to respond to the same question. The first questions were not given to either candidate in advance. The candidates will each have 2 minutes for opening remarks, 1 minute to respond to each question, and 2 minutes for a closing statement. Either candidate may choose not to respond to every question. The time limits on responses will be strictly observed, and our timekeepers will hold cards visible to the speaker indicating when 30 seconds remain. When the stop card is shown, the speaker must end within 10 seconds. The speakers will be allowed then to complete their sentence or thought. As your moderator tonight, I am responsible for enforcing the time limits and may interrupt candidates to do so. Our two candidates tonight are Carol Rodenbach, the Republican candidate, and Matthew Martinez, the Democratic candidate. And I do have two bios for them. Matthew Martinez is a seventh generation Colorado native, Marine Corps Operations Iraqi Freedom veteran, and Matthew holds a bachelor's degree from Adams State University and a master's degree from Southern New Hampshire University. He currently sits in the Valley-wide Health Systems and La Puente Home Board of Directors. Matthew is currently the director for the Prison College Program at Adams State University. Carol Rickenbach has spent her entire life serving others, working in healthcare. As a lifelong Valley resident, she has dedicated her life to run, she has decided to run for this position to represent the blue collar workers of House District 62. Thank you. I'll pass it back over to Wanda.
Thank you. So we can go ahead and begin with our questions.
The first question I have is for candidate Martinez. What recommendations do you have to alleviate the lack of affordable housing?
That is a great question. And I think it's been in Colorado and Southern Colorado specifically for a number of years. The housing market, I think prices have been exponentially increased over the last few years. And I think at least part of solving that issue is increasing wages for workers and making sure that we have a true living wage that's associated with their working and being able to have them being able to afford to live where they're at. Second of all, with that is making sure that we are looking at housing prices as well too, just so that that means that when they have increased wages, that they're not still being overpriced outside of the market.
Thank you. Candidate Ritter, the same question. What recommendations do you have to alleviate the lack of affordable housing?
You know, there was actually legislation done in the Senate and in the House last legislative session that would have helped alleviate some of the crunch that is on our housing situation. And part of it was rental costs that you could actually get reimbursed in your house for some rent that would have helped out during the COVID situation. There's been some legislation that's been put forth that actually will really harm the housing situation that we have right now, just making it much more costly to even build houses. And even within the tiny homes, there was new legislation that was put in on tiny homes that will make even that tiny home situation more costly for the Coloradans.
Thank you. Our next question. This will be for Candidate Rickenbach. Should the state play a role in regulating firearms? If yes, what role should they play? And if no, why not?
No. I always tell people right off the bat, I will not bend the knee on gun rights. I will not. I don't believe that our Second Amendment should be infringed upon. I believe in the people that fought for this country, and they fought very hard for us to be able to defend ourselves. And if you look at our history and all the way back to when we were first became a country and why we are a very fortunate country to have gun rights, I think there's other ways to help control gun violence and violence in schools, and particularly is where this always comes up. You know, there was a bill and that was also killed by the Democrats last year to give more money to security officers within the school system, and that was not even supported. I do not support gun legislation, gun restrictions.
Candidate Martinez, same question. Should the state play a role in regulating firearms? If yes, what role should they play? If no, why not?
So I believe first and foremost, you know, being able to protect our citizens and being able to make sure that our children are protected is the most paramount priority. Colorado already has restrictions on some gun regulations. And I think that for the most part, some of those are common sense. I think, you know, reinforcing background checks and making sure that people that should not have firearms that can't just walk into a store and purchase them on the same day. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. So being able to continue to reinforce those, I think, is something that's paramount. And yeah.
Thank you. Candidate Martinez, what role do each of the following have in working towards solving drought issues? Residents, farmers, businesses, municipalities, and the state.
Can you repeat that one more time? Sorry.
Yes. What role do each of the following have in working towards solving drought issues in Colorado? Residents, farmers, businesses, municipalities, and the state.
Okay. So first and foremost, I believe in climate change, and I believe that we're seeing the impacts of that here today in Colorado, and we've seen it for the last 20 years with the ongoing drought. And as this continues, we're seeing farmers that are not being able to grow, or they're not being able to grow as much for a very sustainable period of time. So I think that being able to, for all of us to be able to be conscious of our usage and making sure that we are being cautious with that water, because it's precious. I mean, that's the lifeblood of the San Luis Valley and in Pueblo, and being able to make sure that we are doing right by that, I think, is there. So I would say that all of these need to make sure that we are being conscious of our water usage and cutting back where we can, and being able to save where we can, and making sure that other people can't come and take our water away.
Thank you. Candidate Rickenbach, what role do each of the following have in working towards solving drought issues? Residents, farmers, businesses and municipalities, and the state.
As far as residents go, there's already restrictions on watering your lawn, those sort of things that really make a difference, shutting off the water while you're brushing your teeth, conserving water when you're doing showers, that sort of thing. As far as farmers go, farmers are really working on controlling their water use. And in particular, when you look at the technology that's available and even crop changes what crops they may grow, as long as there's a good demand for those crops. Farmers are working on that real hard. I'm very proud of them. Businesses are also in that place where residents are, that they can do things to help their water usage within the businesses. Municipalities, same sort of thing, really monitoring and watching their citizens and what they're doing. As far as the state goes, and even as far as the federal, the feds go, what I would suggest is everybody look up to this educated crowd, HR 7793.
Thank you. Candidate Rickenbach, sorry. What part does Colorado's growing population play in the looming water crisis today?
Well, just because you're going to develop into some area that doesn't have water, you don't get to come take ours. That's what plays in it for sure. And we have two Democrat former governors. Years ago, we had AWDI. Some of us remember AWDI, and that was former Governor Lamb that was involved in that. And now we have former Governor Owens that is with RWR, getting into the mix of things, trying to get some water from us. And just because you are developing in municipalities and developing your land, your golf courses, or whatever the case may be, you don't get to do that and take our water.
Thank you. Candidate Martinez, what part does Colorado's growing population play in the looming water crisis?
I think this plays into the big urban and rural divide that's happening right now in Colorado, where Denver and the metro areas are growing, and they are taking resources away from rural Colorado and trying to justify what they're doing. Well, my opinion is, if they have a residence, a shopping mall that they didn't plan for and they don't have water, well, that's not our problem. What our problem is making sure that we're preserving our water and making sure that people can't come in and take it. I absolutely oppose the RWR plan right now. And that's unfortunately a product of what's been happening, is where they're building on these areas that don't have the resources to do it, and they're just saying, well, we'll figure it out. Well, that's their problem. I don't believe in diverting water. I don't believe in taking it from one area and putting it in another. That's just not right, and it doesn't bode well for all of Colorado.
Thank you. Candidate Martinez, detail your response to the repeal of Roe versus Wade and the stance Colorado has taken on abortions and birth control.
With Roe v. Wade, I believe that was a loss of constitutional rights that we've had, and that is the first time that that's happened in our history as a country. I firmly believe and support Representative Danae Escar and Senator Nick Hendrickson's stance in being able to pass legislation to reinforce Colorado's abortion rights access, and making sure that at least for Colorado that we are protected and our women are protected and being able to have freedom of choice in that matter. I believe that those consequences are harsh. And right now, Colorado is on a proverbial island with that. And it's going to, we're going to start seeing the consequences of that coming forward. So I really believe in making sure that we're reinforcing that legislation that has already passed and making sure that in Colorado, we are always guaranteeing that right for a woman's right to choose.
Thank you. Candidate Regenbach, detail your response to the repeal of Roe versus Wade and the stance Colorado has taken on abortion and birth control.
Roe versus Wade, that a reversal of that, just give it back to the states. And when you look at abortion, that should be something that is between a physician and his patient, his or her patient. I did watch Nick Hendrickson in the debate with the Pueblo County Chamber, and he talked about, and which I hear a lot out in the field, I hear about the 12-year-old who has been, she may have been raped, there's incest, and I don't understand, which nobody's been able to explain to me, Colorado already had it to 6 months, why would we have to push it all the way to full term? California has a bill that passed the House and the Senate, and it's on Newsom's desk right now that increases it to 7 days after birth and possibly 28 days. And you can look that up.
Thank you. Candidate Regenbach, list your ideas for combating the lack of high quality and affordable childcare.
Say that again, the lack of affordability?
Yes, for combating the lack of high quality and affordable childcare.
So when you're looking at childcare and you even look at what the different daycares, what they're facing as far as even operating a business, they're so heavily regulated. And I understand the need for regulation. I'm a nursing home and assisted living and home health administrator. I live under a lot of regulations in my business. And so I understand the need for regulation, but I don't understand the need for over-regulating, and that hinders business. The cost to conduct that business for those child care centers is really important. When you look at incentivizing people, when you look at their home space, we have at home, most child care businesses are within the home. And when you look at the housing crisis we have, and let alone keeping up the house, when you're Colorado is at 15.6% inflation, number one inflation in the whole country, we're going to see more problems with daycare.
Thank you. Candidate Martinez, list your ideas for combating the lack of high quality and affordable childcare.
Sure. Just as I've been stating all night, that I think that there's an urban and rural divide here. I think that Denver and Springs, they have those available options. Whereas we struggle here in rural Colorado. So one of those things is Governor Polis's initiative for pre-kindergarten, I think, was a great first step. But I also think that having an emphasis in rural Colorado and the rural areas is something that's absolutely necessary. I think that being able to put resources in rural Colorado to making sure that our families and our children are provided for just as much as those that are in Denver is an absolute paramount priority. And so I think working that in with the state budget, as they did with that, is something that would be beneficial for us down here.
Thank you. Candidate Martinez, how would you work towards resolving the lack of mental health services, both in general and for our unhoused citizens?
Great question. So this is actually one of my points that I want to focus on in this next legislative session. So right now, the Department of Veterans Affairs is limiting veterans that are not in crisis mode to 4 mental health visits per year. And that's absolutely absurd. So being other states do this, and I think that Colorado is really primed to being able to do this as well, is really start a mental health initiative and making sure that people can see mental health providers when they want to at an affordable rate or at free costs. So part of that, I think with the telehealth revolution during COVID, I think has opened up way more options for us to being able to get people to providers, get them seen, and get them the help that they need. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, 4 mental health visits when you're not in crisis is unacceptable. We should be able to be guaranteeing that for veterans as well as others that are on in Colorado.
Thank you. Candidate Regenbach, how would you list your ideas for combating the How would you work towards resolving the lack of mental health services in both in general and for our unhoused citizens?
So as far as lack of mental services, you know, another thing that we're facing that we've really got to face head on as far as the mental health crisis that we have is that we have a serious drug use problem, and the serious drug use problem needs to be addressed. And once that's addressed, I think we can really get over some barriers that we can really problem solve and look at why we are having such a mental health crisis and what exactly can we really do for that. And we need to put some professionals in a room to get that done. We also have crime issues. When you look at the crime that is going on in the state, that can really affect mental health. Then you look at the kids and the stress that's on the kids and the COVID situation that we've had, all of the executive orders that have gone on to us about our health and health decisions that have been put upon us. There's been a lot of outside stressors that I think has really gone into the mental health situations for people.
Thank you. Candidate Rigenberg, describe the state's recent history on funding for higher education and your thoughts on this topic.
Funding for higher education. You know, I believe that our teachers, our schools definitely need to be funded. We have a $38 billion budget and $4 billion of it is for schools. When you look at a bill that was actually introduced in the Senate last year, it was actually even to reimburse teachers for expenses out of their own pocket. That was killed by the Democrats. When you look at what has been put forth to try to help the state and to help the teachers within our state, we need to really look at even security for our teachers in our schools. And there was the resource officers, that bill was also killed by the Democrats. We have to really analyze what situation we have and where can we get the biggest bang for our buck if we are going to fund the schools.
Thank you. Candidate Martinez, describe the state's recent history on funding for higher education and your thoughts on this topic.
Well, as a higher education administrator, I could go on and on about this, so I'll try to condense this as much as possible. So I believe in the last couple of years, we've seen an increase in funding, but it hasn't been quite enough to be able to offset the cost of increased tuition. So really, I think evaluating what we're doing at the higher education level for each institution and really looking at what their needs are and being able to provide those additional resources. So right now, you know, the CUs, the CSUs of the world, they may not need to have as much funding put there because of their large base, but whereas in Adams State, a Trinidad State, Western even, that they may need more funding and being able to adequately do what they need to do, because I think ultimately at the end of the day, everybody still has bills to get that need to be met, but we also need to make sure that we are capping tuition costs, because as those increase, it becomes increasingly difficult for students to be able to go to college and being able to adequately afford that. So I think being able to proportionately fund each institution.
Thank you. Candidate Martinez, our public education system has struggled, and the struggle became worse during COVID. Describe the importance of public K-12 education and specifically efforts to better respect and pay teachers.
Well, first of all, I'm a product of the public K-12 system right here in Monta Vista. Secondly, I've been endorsed by the Colorado Educators Association and AFT, and I believe that this is something that they also have issue with, and they want to make sure that they're addressed. Our teachers are not paid what they should be paid. What we're asking them to do every single day in the classroom and continued hurdles and being able to continue and to increase standards, their pay is not there. So being able to make sure that we are paying equitably for that, and then again, going back to having a true living wage, I think really makes sense. A lot of our teachers in K-12 now have master's degrees, and they're below the poverty line, and that is unacceptable. If we want to make sure that we're passing off good information to our student and making sure that they're prepared for life after they graduate, we need to pay them better, and we're going to get a good product.
Thank you. Candidate Rigenberg, our public education system has struggled, and the struggle became worse during COVID. Describe the importance of public K-12 education and specifically efforts to better respect and pay our teachers.
The efforts to respect and pay our teachers needs to start with legislators respecting our schools and respecting our parents. So parents and grandparents have a vital role in their child's education, in their grandchild's education. And particularly the Parents' Bill of Rights that was killed by the Democrats is something that every person can go look up and you can read the Parents' Bill of Rights. I wonder to myself what happened to the Parents' Bill of the Parents' Rights in the first place. So that's always something that puzzles me, but let alone the Parents' Bill of Rights wasn't able to pass. We've got classroom behaviors that are out of control, and really good teachers are leaving the field. They're not going to keep on teaching under these circumstances. And so we've got to do something to make the working environment and the classroom better. The testing levels of the kids are coming in at such low levels. The kids aren't even testing in their prospective grade levels.
Thank you. Candidate Rigamok, who should receive free breakfast and school lunches? None, some, or all children, and why?
So already we have some children receive that, and it's based on what the parents make at home. I received free lunches just because of how my family qualified. My children, when they were in the school system, we just packed a lunch and we got some help and some not so much help. But again, it's just like the seniors' Meals on Wheels, same sort of deal that I think there definitely should be help for parents to have that funding in the schools and the classrooms for the lunches. And we've got to remember, though, that for every dollar we spend, it comes from somewhere. Money does not grow on trees, and we've got to be able to take care of people, realizing that our budget, we've got to stick within our budget, and we cannot tax the people to death.
Thank you. Candidate Martinez, who should receive free breakfast and lunch at school? None, some, or all children, and why?
I firmly believe that no child should go to school and be hungry if they don't have those options. Unfortunately, you see a lot of school-age children now where that may be their only meal, and summer times are particularly difficult because they don't have that option. So I think making sure that we are providing and making sure that they're fed and providing that service to our students, for all of our students, is absolutely, absolutely paramount.
Thank you. Candidate Martinez, can you summarize your understanding of the state's finances and your suggestions, if any, for improvements?
The state finances, that is a million-dollar question. So right now, you're looking at the next legislative cycle. So for the next 4 years, the bills that were passed in this last legislative session have an extended life. So meaning that bills that were passed will continue on and be impacted in this next budget and in the two following years. So I think, you know, first and foremost, we have to look at Tabor and being able to really evaluate and say, does it make sense for what's happening now? There are some good things that have happened with Tabor. We all got our refund but with that that filed our taxes. But we also have to see and look and seeing what we can fund and if it still makes sense. So I think, you know, being able to put more power in the hands of our legislators and holding them responsible for making sure that we have a balanced budget, which we already have. But again, making sure that we're making good use of those funding because those funds are limited every year.
Thank you. Candidate Rodenbach, can you summarize your understanding of the state's finances and your suggestions, if any, for improvements?
To summarize the state's finances, man, we're spending a lot of money. $38 billion budget, and we have to remember that government doesn't make money. So government doesn't create widgets, doesn't create a service. All that $38 billion comes from your pocket. It comes from our pocket, the taxpayers. So the Tabor is the taxpayers' Bill of Rights, and it does restrict on being able just to increase taxes. So what this administration has done, and the Democrats this last several years have done, is they've given extra fees. And so those extra fees is where they're collecting lots of money. The Tabor refund, that $750, I'm going to put a little commercial in right here. There's a lot of you that did not get it, or you know people. They weren't required to do a income tax return. And everywhere I go, I talk about this just because of the poorest of the poor are being left behind. And so all you have to do is fill out your Colorado income tax return, fill out lines 1, 5, and 7 with a zero and sign page 4.
Thank you. Candidate Rigamok, this is our final question. Is there an issue that you feel is so important that you would cross the aisle to see it at least partially resolved?
Oh, there's so many issues. I would so cross the aisle on so many issues. And what I totally believe is, first you must understand before you can be understood. And I believe in that. I think that's the way I've operated my teams and all the people I've worked with and have hired and the committees and the boards that I've been on. First, you really must understand before you can be understood. And so I think it's important that we as legislators, that we do that. Now, of course, some things, there's some fundamental things that we're not going to want to negotiate on. But again, we've got to understand each other, and we've got to believe in each other and have faith in each other. But number one, we've got to represent the people, not a party. We have to represent the people.
Thank you. Candidate Martinez, is there an issue that you feel is so important that you would cross the aisle to see it at least partially resolved?
Sure. So I'll answer the question first, then we'll go there. So making sure that we're abiding the RWR proposal and making sure that we are not taking water out of any place in Colorado and putting that somewhere else. I believe too much we've seen in the last 10, 20 years where collaboration has been looked at as a bad thing. We have to be able to work across the aisle. We have to be able to get legislation passed, because at the end of the day, who's impacted when that doesn't happen? The people. And so we have to really make sure that identifying issues that are nonpartisan to start off with, and being able to start finding solutions to those issues and being able to work together to benefit our citizens. Because if we don't work together and we don't collaborate, we don't get legislation passed, and then we're not doing our jobs, and that doesn't benefit anybody.
Thank you. This has concluded our questions. I'll now pass the mic over to Wanda.
Thank you, Ms. Hawking, for being our moderator this evening. And thank you, Candidate Martinez and Candidate Riggebach, for giving us your time and participating in this forum. We really appreciate it. Thank you also to our timekeepers.
Closing statements.
Oh, yes. Excuse me. We have closing statements. Sorry. Yeah. I still thank you, but I won't do it again.
Go ahead.
All right. So my name is Matthew Martinez. I'm born in Vista, Colorado. I'm a seventh-generation Colorado native. I'm a Marine Corps and Operation Iraqi Freedom veteran. I held a bachelor's degree from Adams State and a Master of Science in New Hampshire. I was also a previous member of the Monta Vista City Council. So for this election are fighting for our water, making sure that we are supporting our community health centers and their networks and local hospitals, passing a rural Colorado economic incentive package, and implementing a statewide veterans mental health initiative. I think that those issues are something that have plagued rural Colorado for quite some time, and it's something that I want to fight for. So today I ask for your support. I've dedicated my entire life to public service, to being the voice of the underserved, advocating and influencing change, and above all else, listening to the needs of the people. As your state representative, I will be your champion, your fighter, and above all else, your voice in Denver.
Thank you all very much for doing all this. It's much appreciated. This November, the people are going to speak very loud and clear. We are not proceeding on this path that the Democrats have laid out for us. When we cross over into 2023, all of us Coloradans are going to get a real effect of the 2021 legislation session led by the Democrats. We're going to have a 51 cent per gallon gas increase. Colorado's inflation rate is number one in the country at 15.6%. That boils down to an extra $953 a month that we need to live. Where is that coming from out of the average family's pocket? The fentanyl crisis. Someone in Colorado overdoses every 5 hours and 56 minutes. Soft on drugs and crime is literally killing Coloradans. Colorado was number one in nursing home deaths. Polis, not Cuomo, was the number one killer of older Americans in long-term care. He made a deal with our money with a new startup business selling faulty COVID swabs at the tune of $90 million. This business was partially owned by a Democrat campaign donor. Legislation needs to be written to protect us from government overreach, especially in the healthcare sector. Legislation needs to be written to protect our children from the onslaught of governmental dictated curriculum. Legislation needs to be written so as to protect our tax dollars for schools and protect our children. We will not choose money over our children's future. Legislation needs to be written to protect small businesses who are especially getting hit hard. Legislators need to work together to solve crime and corruption issues. Legislators need to pray for wisdom. We have from lawyers to judges to police officers. We can get this done. We can get the work done. I appreciate your vote very much and all of your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I thank our timekeepers, Mitch and Jan, and especially thanks to our viewers and listeners. The League of Women Voters reminds you that the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the sponsoring organizations. Some of the positions that have been stated should be considered opinions and not facts necessarily agreed upon by experts. We encourage all voters to learn more about your candidates, to learn more about your issues, and do your own research to get factual information that you can use to make your decisions. You can check out our website, the League of Women Voters sponsors the website of Vote 411, and there's information there about the candidates and where they stand on issues. Also, just a reminder that the League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan organization. We don't support or oppose either candidate or any candidate or any political party. This concludes our forum. We thank you for attending and for being an active and engaged citizen.
And you have been listening to a candidate forum for Colorado House District 62 candidates, Democrat Matthew Martinez and Republican Carol Riggenbaugh. The forum has been brought to you by the League of Women Voters of the San Luis Valley and Pueblo, who have also graciously allowed us to broadcast the audio from the forum tonight. Your moderator for tonight has been Courtney Hawking. I am Paul Richards for KSBK. Hey, thank you for listening.
Another set, cued and ready to go.